Hello and welcome to the £1 Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Wayne, and this is episode 24. If this is your first time coming to the show, welcome along. And if you're a repeat listener, well, welcome back again. If you're not sure what the hell this is, basically, I've been out and bought a very cheap DVD and just to see what you can get. And the whole sort of crux of the thing is, it's got to be a pound or less. And that's what it is. On episode 24, I have a repeat offender. He's been on the show. Is this your third time on the show? Ben, I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is the third time, yeah. I'm happy to just be on every season you ever do if you want. If you need a guy, I'm your guy.
Well, thank you very much. I have Captain Moby from the Super Glued Wooden Pirates podcast. That's who I've got on today again. So welcome along, Captain Moby.
Thank you for having me, Wayne. I'm looking forward to this one because you did pick me in mind for this movie. I like the way that you pick your guests with the movies because you know it's like something that might be up their street or whatever.
Right, so yeah, we normally run straight into this, but I will say that I saw this film in the charity. This is a charity shop find, this one. This is a grand total of 33.33 recurring p, because this was three for a pound in the Salvation Army. And on episode 24 we will be watching and talking about 2003's Timeline.
Let's be careful. Who's going in first?
Five young archaeologists have made a remarkable discovery.
Help me.
From the best-selling thriller by Michael Crichton.
Your father wrote that, but he wrote it 600 years ago.
What?
I just want to know where my dad is.
Your father
is in the 14th century.
We need you to help us get him back.
A journey back in time.
DNA streams are locked in.
What about weapons?
Nothing modern goes back.
So how are we doing? We're getting a chance of a lifetime.
Think of it as the ultimate field trip.
Everybody take cover now!
From Paramount Pictures.
There's no escape.
And director Richard Donner.
We got 650 years of knowledge on these guys. If we put our heads together, we should get out of here in 20 minutes.
A dangerous rescue. Dad! The ultimate battle.
Come on.
For survival.
Let's go!
Paul Walker. Timeline.
So, 2003's Timeline? Timeline. 2003's Timeline, directed by Richard Donner. That's right, everybody. Richard Donner. It stars Paul Walker, Gerard Butler, Francis O'Connor, Anna Friel, Beanie Connolly, and Neil McDonough. To name but a few, the cast is massive on this. It has a budget of 80 million. How much do you think it grossed worldwide, Ben?
What's the budget? 80 million?
80 million, yeah.
I'm going to say, looking at that cast and looking at the director and that, you know, it should be bringing in towards 100 to 200 million, really. Like, without seeing the movie, that kind of cast, that director, it's a time travel movie, 200 million box office.
44. 44 worldwide.
It had to be, because I've never even heard of it. But, you know, looking at that, you'd think, that's amazing cast, this cannot go wrong. But I've never heard of this in my life until you brought it into my life. So I'm like, exactly. This was a flop. Has to be.
Yeah, so IMDb score of 5.7 out of 10. And I can't believe I'm saying this for a Richard Donner film, but a Rotten Tomatoes score for a Richard Donner film of 13%.
Absolutely crazy to me. What went wrong? What happened here?
Well, we shall endeavour to find out. This is a 12 certificate, and as I said, it came out in 2003, and it runs at 110 minutes. So I'm going to read you this now. This is the DVD synopsis directly from the back of the DVD. From director-producer Richard Donner, Lethal Weapon, and producer Lauren Shuler Donner, X-Men, inspired by author Michael Crichton, Jurassic Park, Timeline is a thrilling action-adventure, edge-of-your-seat movie at its heart-stopping best. A mystifying look at the future with a mind-bending twist. Timeline is about a team of student archaeologists digging at a medieval site in France when suddenly their professor disappears. Into the 14th century! Embarking on a perilous journey to rescue him from the middle of a feudal war, the students find that they're not just excavating the past, they're living in it. Well, what do you reckon to that then, Ben?
Oh, it sounds amazing. I love some time travel, me. You know that.
Well, so a couple of things in there straight away to take. It's Michael Crichton. This is Jurassic Park, everybody. You know, this is his it's another strange, you know, it's a time travel film by the guy from Jurassic Park.
Everything so far sounds to me Oscar winner, box office draw, everything. This sounds like it could be the next Jurassic Park or the next Back to the Future or anything, but it screams to me that this is a successful movie, but it didn't turn out to be, so it must be a right piece of shit, and I'm excited to see.
Right, well, I'll give you some background on the film now. It was shot in 76 days and mainly on location in Quebec. I mean, that's French Canadian, isn't it? So, you know, it's the same difference. The Battle of Castlegard, is completely fictitious. It never happened. It's not an historical event at all. It's made up for this film completely. Michael Crichton, the author of the book this film is based on, disliked this film so much that he refused to license any more of his books so they could be turned into movies.
Oh, no.
I watched some of the Journey Through Time when I was researching this as a documentary on the DVD. And to be honest, Richard Donner looks like he's a man trying to wrangle sheep rather than he's trying to direct actors. It's very strange to watch it. At one point, I think he says, directing the kids of the Goonies was easier than this.
Oh, no. Oh, this does not bode well.
Well, the next thing is the film suffered major studio interference. There was multiple reshoots. They changed the score, and there were massive deep cuts to the story as well. And I read a Roger Ebert review that said that Richard Donner and his wife introduced the film at a screening, and that is never a good sign. So, with that in mind. Richard Donner, the director of the film, he has 83 director credits to his name in a career that spanned more than 40 years. And unfortunately, we lost him. We're recording this in 2022, and unfortunately, we lost him in 2021. His films include Lethal Weapon, The Goonies, The Omen, just to name a few. His trivia is littered. This is what I got from his trivia. His trivia is littered with films that he could have or should have directed, right the way from Alien 3 to the 1989 Batman. Even Wild Wild West, his name was at some point attached to those films before stepping away. And he started his career way back in the 70s doing TV work from Ironside and Gilligan's Island. So,
Richard Donner's a great director, and he, you know, I'm not surprised he'd been attached to so many things that he didn't end up doing, because he was kind of like the go-to guy. You know, if he was in his prime and alive today, you know, he would be the guy that would, do you want to try and do a Star Wars, or do you want a Marvel film or whatever? You know, he was that guy. Superman.
When I was researching Richard Donner, one of the things I didn't put in this was he tried to make Jurassic Park before Steven Spielberg was attached to it, and I don't know whether the studio were not happy with some of the things he wanted to do, but they sort of ushered him away from it. But he was attached at some point, or he showed interest in Jurassic Park as well. But we'll move on to Paul Walker now, who plays Chris Johnston in the film, and most famous obviously for his recurring character in the Fast and the Furious franchise as Brian O'Connor. Among his 44 actor credits, including Joyride, She's All That, and Pleasantville. And as we all know, unfortunately, we lost Paul Walker in 2013 in a car accident. Gerard Butler, who plays Andre Merrick, he has 70 actor credits to his name, including Reign of Fire, Tomb Raider, The Legend of the Tomb, and Phantom of the Opera. He played Dracula in Dracula 2000, and his acting career took off when he was approached by Stephen Burkoff in a cafe. He gave him a role in a stage production of Coriolanus. I've got it right. I've said it many times, and I'm sure I've got it right in one of them, so I'll just edit it to the one that's right.
Yeah, to say it 10 times, sure you'll get one.
You know, that Ralph Fiennes Shakespeare thing that he did a few years ago, that one. After this, Butler gave up. He was studying for a degree in law and gave it up to start acting. And his film debut was in Mrs. Brown's, where he played... Mrs. Brown's, that's terrible. No, Mrs. Brown, where he played Billy Connolly's brother. Who is also in Timeline. We'll go on to the critical response now. So this is BBCI and Jamie Russell, who gave this 2 stars. And he said, Timeline is a kind of a brain-dead romp that's so unintentionally hilarious, you're likely to crack a rib guffawing. Oh, dear.
Well, you know what? It sounds like it's going to be bad, but I'm going to like it.
And then we got I found these guys as well. So it's fatguysatthemovies.com, and the reviewer was Kevin Carr, and he said, "Timeline is a great example of a woulda, coulda, shoulda movie. If the filmmakers would have cast the film better, written a better script, and strengthened the characters as they should have done, they could have made a great movie. But it's not." And we'll get to Letterboxd now. So Letterboxd has got a very middling review out of all its reviews. It's 2.5 out of 5 for Letterboxd. And a couple of reviews on there. Valdemar Hawkson said, "I wish I could go back in time and stop myself watching this stupid movie," and gave it 1.5 stars. And M-Line gave this 3.5 stars and said, "Gerard Butler was a hardcore history nerd. Paul Walker didn't really like history, but his eyes were blue, so I guess that counts for something."
Oh, I can see what's happening here. It sounds like, you say, the studio interference, and I'm guessing agents have made people get cast in this that perhaps weren't right for it.
I'll give you a massive information dump, so we'll go on to now. What are you at this point in the podcast, we haven't watched the film. We will break in a moment for an intermission and go and watch the film. So at this point, we haven't watched the film. So, Ben, with everything I've just told you and what you've gleaned from seeing the front cover and whatever else you've come out across your end about Timeline, what's your expectation?
Amusingly in the wrong way, a time travel movie. It's not going to be a comedy, but I feel like I'm going to be laughing at it. It's probably all right because Richard Donner's not going to put out a movie that's really, really badly made. So it's probably going to look all right, but it's not going to have the right dialogue. And if the script's bad, then it's going to be some questionable things happening. But it's time travel, baby, so, and that's what happens. So I'm sure I'm going to get a kick out of it regardless.
I'm not far off the similar to you, so I've got this idea of being very big action with very little plot. A sort of trapped in the past MacGuffin, you know, they'll have to go get a thing so the thing works so they can get the thing and then travel back in time, you know, or travel back to where they, back to the future, as it were. And then a sort of Stargate time machine sort of feel. Those films that were, well, they predate this by a few years, but that sort of feel to it, you know.
I'm thinking it can't be that impressive. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be as action as you imagine. I think it's going to be a bit grounded and boring in places, because 80 million isn't a lot, even like when this was made, with the 2000s or something.
It's really not, like, no.
No, it should be way more than that if you want to make a good action movie. So I'm guessing this was spent on the actors, you know, getting Paul Walker in and stuff. You know what I mean? They wasted the money there. And I did a time travel episode recently on my podcast, which I'm not promoting at all. Super Glue Porridge. Check it out anywhere you can. And I did a lot of research on time travel movies, and I didn't even come across this on any list anyway. I didn't even know of its existence. So what does that tell you?
Somebody's gone back in time and wiped it from existence. I own the only copy.
That could be, yeah, man. Could be worth something.
So, I mean, above all else, it is Richard Donner. It's still Richard Donner. It's still a Richard Donner film. So I expect it to be solidly made and you know, I'm hoping that he's got some technicality to it. You know, we're talking Michael Crichton here. And for all the jargon that he throws in Jurassic Park, I still believe that they could make dinosaurs in that film. You know, their science was enough that a layperson like me went, yeah, right, I believe that shit. So I'm hoping for the same for this. And if I'm really honest, I'm really hoping that everything I've just read is rubbish and it is a hidden gem. Because I haven't found a proper hidden gem yet where I can go and tell somebody and say, you need to see this film, it's fucking brilliant. I haven't found one of those yet. And I'm really hoping.
Difficult thing to find, Wayne, these days, because of the access to the internet.
Yeah.
Anybody can just like Google an actor and find out all their weird stuff they did. You know, Jennifer Aniston tried to get people to forget the leprechaun. Not going to happen, man. We know you were in it.
I will say there's one more little plot thing. I guarantee at some point there will be some treachery, you know, some problem with them getting back to the future. Because if not, this is a very, very fast film.
it's going to be some convoluted crap that's going to keep them doing whatever they're doing, and there's going to be somebody doesn't agree with somebody else. We just know.
Yeah, there's got to be something. Well, we saw Jurassic Park. We know what happened in there. It's going to be the same sort of thing, just with time travel, you know, and French chateaus and castles and shit. So we'll give you all that now, and we give the expectation. So now what we're going to do is we're going to break for an intermission while me and Ben go and watch the film. So here's the intermission. Right, so me and Ben are back. We have watched the film. Quick shout out from here on in. If you haven't seen Timeline and you do want to go see Timeline, stop the podcast now. Just like time travel, stop the podcast now. Go and watch the film. Come back. We'll be waiting. Just like, just, you know, the magic of pause. Yeah, so spoilers from here on in. Quick initial reaction, Ben. What's your initial reaction?
Slight disappointment. Heavy disappointment. Yeah, that's initial. That's the first thing I can say. This was not what I wanted.
Yeah, it's not a crushing defeat, but it's not far off. So, yeah, we're going to break down the whole plot now. We start with a car driving through a desert, and the driver looks suspiciously like Richard Donner. That's because it is Richard Donner. We cut to a man running through a forest, and both of these things are running side by side. So there's a guy being chased by a horseback rider through a forest, and he's all in medieval garb. And then you jump back to this guy driving down this desert road, and then suddenly the guy being running through the forest is in the middle of the road. Richard Donner and his car swerve around this guy, but he's collapsed in the road. And then we cut to the hospital and we see this man's died. That's it. An MRI reveals that all his veins are broken and all his bones are as well. And then Frank Gordon turns up. This is Neil McDonough. He shows up and claims the body, and he's from this company called ITC. That's the first bit of bullshit in this film. I went, it's an IT company. What the fuck's he doing claiming a body?
You can't just do that. Just go into some hospital and be like, yeah, I'll get rid of that. I'll take that off your hands. It's fine.
To be fair to the film, it was about 20 minutes later, I went, the fuck did he get that body out of the morgue?
Yeah, I'm watching it and I'm thinking, oh, something suspicious. Let's see what happens next with that question. That's movies for you, and that's me watching a movie. Yeah. I just don't question the logic of things like that.
So while in the hospital, he gets a call from David Thewlis, who is this guy called Doniger, who tells him to get everything. And I mean, David Thewlis is always shifty. Has he ever played a stand-up character yet? Oh, Harry Potter, that's the only one I think he's ever played a normal, and he's a bit shifty in that one, ain't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be fair.
It turns out this man said Castlegard before he died, and we cut to Castlegard, France, where Professor Johnston is giving a lecture, and his son Chris, Paul Walker, and the assistant Merrick, Gerard Butler, are there assisting him, and we get some history from Merrick. So pay attention, everybody.
The French were trying to push the English out of France for 100 years. Lord Oliver, he tries to take the fight out of the French. Now, he has a prisoner, a woman. A woman of class and a woman of nobility, Commander Arnaud's sister, Lady Clare. Now, during the battle, he hangs her from the battlements for all of the French forces to see. Now, instead of demoralising the French, no, it whips them into a frenzy, and they attack the castle like madmen, and they overpower the English with sheer passion. So, the fortress of La Roque fell in one night because of the death of one woman, Lady Clare. All right, folks.
The first bit of nonchalant exposition here, the professor is going to see a man who is giving him information on where to dig and where to find these historical goodies that they keep turning up, like, I think it's like brooches and things like that, because it's like a monastery where they're building, they're digging, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This feels very trodden ground here, the whole setup here and the whole, you know, you go to the dig site and it's just, I was sat there going, well, this is Jurassic Park, isn't it? It's just not dinosaurs, just artifacts and things.
The same kind of shit. Yeah, if it feels like this is a movie that I found that was from 30 years ago, but it isn't.
Yeah,
it was made not very long ago.
Back to the film. Merrick is this is Gerard Butler's character, is practicing his archery. Hopefully that will come in handy soon, you know. And then Merrick and Chris, that's Paul Walker's character, they talk and they bring up this girl called Kate and how Chris should tell her how he feels. And then we meet Kate, who is Frances O'Connor, and she's an archaeologist. And Chris confesses his feelings, and she says nothing's going to happen because he's the boss's son. This is all very perfunctory and doesn't need to be in the film really at all. It's all sort of, it's a subplot that really doesn't need anything.
Mate, there's loads in this film that was unnecessary. Just get to the goddamn time travel. This is stuff that nobody, because of the performances that are so bad, nobody cares.
So then we go back to the dig site, and Merrick sets up a Chekhov's gun with a knight with a missing ear. And you just know that's going to come back to bite him in the ass later on. And then we go, the next day, there's a cave, apparently, and it's a tunnel. And Kate and Merrick abseil down to check it out. They're fucking great archaeologists, aren't they? You know what I mean? They're just like All of them are Indiana Jones. I want to be an archaeologist, but I don't think I've got the physique for it. You know what I mean?
No, you have to be like fit as, you know, bodybuilder. You know, you need to be like, you just can't be a normal person because these people just look like normal people, but they have superhuman strength or something. Because
let's
just jump down there and crack on, no problem. We'll do it 10 times today if you want.
you got to have a brain as big as a fucking planet, have to wear glasses, and have the upper body strength of The Rock to be a fucking archaeologist, obviously.
How can you find the time?
But they go to this cave in this tunnel they've dug out, and the cave has unearthed some more treasures, documents, paintings, and the lens from a pair of glasses that it shouldn't be there. Then the cave becomes unstable, and they just have to get out. I've got to say, Paul Walker looks great, but his fucking acting's as thick as toffee. It really
He's in the wrong movie.
Fucking
you can't
hell.
Put good-looking, blonde-haired, blue-eyed guys who can just remember the lines and pull a few facial expressions. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, Keanu Reeves has made a career out of it. A lot of people do, and we love them, but they need to be in the right movies. You can't put them in something like this, where he's got some quite strong dialogue, and he's got to act surprised and confused. And, you know, it just didn't happen, man. I felt bad for him.
Yeah, fucking.
He's in the wrong movie.
So they take all these treasures out, and it turns out one of these artifacts they've got is a painting, and it has a message on it from Professor Johnston. But the painting is 600 years old. How can this possibly be? So then Chris phones his dad, financier, Doniger, to find out where his dad is, and he tells them that they should all come to ITC headquarters. Now, does this feel a bit Jurassic Park again? Because it certainly did to me. All of you, come and jump on this plane and we'll take you there.
I think if you hadn't have told me, like, at the beginning of the cast, before we watched the movie, that it was based off another book by the same guy who did Jurassic Park, then I might not have put that together myself. I might have just thought, oh, it's another generic. A lot of movies do that, but now you... Because you said that, it's well obvious. He's like, oh man, we are retreading the same steps here, but instead of, like you say, dinosaurs, this is going to be a time machine.
Yeah, so Professor Johnston's crew all board this private plane. You get Chris, Marek, Kate, Francois the red shirt, and Josh, and they head off to ITC headquarters, where we meet Kramer and Doniger. Who explain they have built a teleportation device. You can't see me doing this, but I'm doing inverted commas there. They've created this teleportation device, which is kind of a Brundle machine and a quantum leap generator together. So, yeah, it's sort of like you're expecting Jeff Goldblum to step out along with the Dr. Sam, you know, at the same time. It's really weird.
Yeah, well put.
Yeah, they explain it was developed for transport to transport packages, so they could build in the Amazon and, you know, drop it in the middle of nowhere and it's just there for them to turn up. But it turns out they've pushed the technology, and every time they did it, they ended up in 14th century France. So basically, it's a wormhole. It just takes you from current day to 14th century France. And the professor
never mind the time thing. I just don't end up in France, really.
Any
time period.
Yes, it's a teleportational device that moves you through time and space. So that's what it is. Professor went through the wormhole and never explained why, but I'm guessing he just wanted to. You wanted to get through to see what was in 14th century. I'm guessing they never really say, yeah, this happened. They just go, he went through.
It just happened. Yeah, they decided to waste time with some bullshit romantic stuff instead of explaining why he would want to do that or his motives and that. He's just like, oh, he's done it, but let's crack on. He's done it. What?
Donegan was passing on information to the professor because they were trying to find out why they always end up in 14th century France, and now he's trapped there, and that's sort of that. And then we get this quote.
So what does that mean?
It means the camera was taking photographs of a wilderness near Castlegard, France, in the year 1357.
So wait, what you're saying is that you accidentally discovered time travel?
No, Mr. Stern, we accidentally discovered a wormhole. A wormhole that seems to be locked to a single time and place in the past. 1357, Castlegard.
So what does that mean? You faxed my father's glasses and documents back to the 14th century?
No, Chris. Your father is in the 14th century.
What?
We need you all to help get him back.
Mr. Robert Doniger.
This doesn't make any sense. A wormhole is one of the most volatile forces of the universe. You can't possibly send a person through one.
Yeah, and you can't fit a piece of paper through a telephone wire.
But you can send a fax.
Oh, yeah, sure, once you've broken the message into a stream of electrons, but... Oh, shit.
Now, look, Personally, I don't care about the hows or the whys. What I do care about is my father. Now, did he know about all this?
They decide to go on a quest to save the professor is the best way to go. And Gordon is assigned to go, but tells Doniger he doesn't want to go. Doniger says no and tells him he knows what to do if he sees Decker. Now, we've never mentioned Decker before, but just bear him in mind, Decker. We don't know who he is, just bear him in mind. We got a feeling, and then we start to see a bit of the evil Doniger come out, you know, the fucking Jeff Bezos stroke fucking Mark Zuckerberg type, you know, oh, I'm all powerful. Look at me, I've created a wormhole.
And exactly that.
Chris asks Gordon about his dad, and he gives him a load of shit and like, don't fucking question me. He asks him about how he lost his dad. He says they got separated and things got hairy, and that's it. That's the only thing you get. Like, that's it. They just left him there, basically.
It's like, it's cringe-roided. It's like, how much info can we quickly get in here that we don't have to waste any time on? But it's just like, that wouldn't be a normal conversation. You know, they just crammed a load of stuff in there that you wouldn't say out loud like that normally in that situation. But they just, oh, I hate writing like that.
Yeah,
it's so just, oh, us, the viewer, have just come into these people's lives at this moment, so they need to say this crap so we know. And it's like, that's really bad writing.
Of Johnston's team, only one member says, I'm not going, and he's the only technically minded one. He's called Josh. He's obviously going to be there for our eyes and ears back in back in present day, like. And he says, does anybody know what this machine does? And my question is, yeah, does anybody know what this machine does? None of these fuckers obviously do. They built something that does something completely different. So
yeah, so I don't know if that, again, is just lazy writing, or it's supposed to be part of the plot. Like, oh, we accidentally stumbled across this, so we don't know what to tell you, but we need your help.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Is it a plot device, or is it just like, well, we can't be asked to try and work out how this thing works, so we're not going to write that in the script?
So here comes the caveat, everybody. Pay attention again. There's a caveat with this wormhole. You only get 6 hours. So when you time travel, you only get 6 hours before the markers they give you go dead and you're stuck in the past forever. Now, what gets me about this is, right, so if that's the case, right, it's never fully explained. Oh, and they tell them that the trip will hurt as well. They tell them that everything they say never gets fully explained. So you get 6 hours in the past. No reason why, just, well, I'm assuming because the markers go dead. But you could just beam yourself out at 5:59. You know, 5 hours and 59 minutes. That's it.
Yeah, but it's strange that you're travelling through time, but yeah, it's still normal time, so it's 6 hours, still counts as 6 hours, yeah, no matter what.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. How do you know? Yeah, it's very strange, that is. They all get dressed up as town folk and enter the time machine, which fucking looks like a massive giant washing machine drum, if you ask me. You know, like in Jurassic Park, where Dr. Hammond keeps saying, no expense spared.
Yeah.
Well, some expense spared in this, to be honest.
yeah, everything's spared. We're saving the lot.
Yeah. The machine turns on and our cast all look pained, like they're having a really big shit. And and then Dr. Becker stepped into the quantum leap generator and disappeared. Fuck off. Anyway.
I know, it's just like, I've had enough already watching it at that point. Like, oh God, I know, this can't get better.
So our crew materialise in a river, in a forest, and we get a crash course in how the markers work. Have a listen.
Explain the markers to you. Press your thumbnail in here, it shows the remaining time. Squeeze it and it takes you home, but don't squeeze it.
Why?
Because we haven't found his dad yet. One last thing.
You said hide.
Everyone hide.
All right, everybody,
hide.
Take cover. Let's go.
Let's hide.
Let's
hide. Come on.
After this, they are instantly chased by knights. Both the red shirts of the crew that are sent with Gordon's character are just, you know, these are Marines, and they just get fucking unceremoniously murdered straight away. No fucking about. Everybody else has got no military training, fine, but the two people who have actually got military, dead, fucking gone.
You know what's crazy about that? That does sound like the plot of some kind of mad Gerard Butler movie. And guess what? Gerard Butler's in this.
Yeah, exactly.
This movie inspired all his future movies.
One of the Marines presses his button and jumps back. but not before he pulls a grenade pin just before he jumps. So when he drops back into the future, he blows fucking everything up, including three arrows in his chest. Merrick distracts the guards while the others escape, and he ends up in the root of a bloody root hole with Anna Friel, who's a townsperson. A red knight turns up and Merrick kills him again. I suppose they've already set this up a little bit because he's been using the medieval weapons, so I suppose he could, but he's still killing a person, you know, he's still killing somebody.
Yeah, it's literally just come from being like some kind of a teacher, like, I'm going to share my wisdom of France with you all, and I'm brilliant at this job, and I love archaeology and history, and but tomorrow I'm just going to kill a guy, you know, I'm going to take a life like it's nothing.
Now, here's the next bit, right, that I got from this. Do you remember that brilliant scene in, you'll remember this, of course you will, in Back to the Future 2, where Doc shows you exactly what happens to the timeline when you change the smallest thing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Gerard Butler's just full-on killed a man who was alive the day before and should have been alive the day after.
If you're going off that kind of Back to Future logic, which they clearly are, there's so much shit that happens in this, it should alter everything when they get back.
Space-time continuum, everybody. You know what I mean? It doesn't exist in this universe. Right. Some knights turn up and they're in blue tunics, so it's the red and blue knights versus each other, and they allow our heroes time to escape, and they reunite along their way and with a new recruit, who is Anna Friel's character, and they head off to this village.
The village of Castlegard. We're here.
Well, is everyone going?
Hold on a second.
What day is this?
Merde. Mike. It's the 4th of April.
Of course it is. It's April 4th.
1357.
The day La Roque falls?
Wait. What are you talking about?
You son of a bitch, Gordon.
Excuse me?
You brought us back on the day the French attack. By tonight, this whole place is going to be burned to the ground.
Well, pal, then I suggest you stop with the history lessons and start looking for the professor.
Go back to the lab, and the lab is a mess because it's all damaged, and our heroes are stuck until they fix the washing machine drum, otherwise they're not getting back.
You know what they should have done? Got some Calgon. Washing machines live longer with Calgon.
Time machines live longer with Calgon. we get the moment of the archaeologists freaking out about how wrong they are in their research and findings, just like Dr. Grant and then Ellie Sadler in Jurassic Park when she pulls that leaf, you know, before they see the giant dinosaur for the first time. They do exactly the same thing. Oh, we were really wrong about this and this. Oh, yeah, they do it this way and they do it that way. And at this point, I went, oh, fuck off. Suck a dick. anyway, this is short-lived as they are captured by the knights and taken to Lord Oliver. Surprise Michael Sheen, everybody. Was not expecting to see Michael Sheen in this.
Again, another great actor that would be in an Oscar-winning movie, but instead is in this.
But this is obviously one of his first roles, this. Because this is, we're going back 20 years now, and he's so fucking young in this, the minute he turns up. Mm-hmm. And to be fair to Michael Sheen, he knows exactly what he's going for. He's on fine pantomime form in this, and we see him practicing his sword play with his men, and then we get the wider Scottish like it here because Gerard Butler's turned up, and obviously Billy Connolly has as well. They ask to see the professor, but all he gets is a frosty. Well, everybody gets frosty because of Francois who's with them, and he's a Frenchman, and obviously the English are battling the French. That's what they're saying. This is in the middle of the Hundred Year War, apparently. But no one cares about the tall blonde who is speaking funny. Nobody gives a shit about Paul Walker at all. Frenchman.
let's talk about Paul Walker for a minute. He's so out of place. He's just Brian O'Connor again in this role.
Oh, mate.
It's like someone just took him directly from Fast and Furious and said, crack on with this, and nobody thinks that's weird. Like you say, it's loads of things are not addressed in this movie. It's like, oh, don't worry about it. It's like they think we're stupid. They think, you know, either they think the audience is completely stupid, or Richard Donner's like, I'll give up trying. Just let's get this done.
You need to watch that documentary because that's what it feels like.
Send me a link.
So we get Lord Oliver's accuses now of Francois, our red shirt, of being a spy, and he gets him to say "Je suis espion," which is I am a spy, and has him killed. No fucking about. Just him. No one else. Just him, because he's French. You know, not that they've all walked in together. Just him. That's it. Just because he's French, have him fucking killed. Not the big Aryan blonde bugger or the Scots. Oh no, just a Frenchman. Anyway, they get thrown in a hayloft. of all things, and they're reunited with Billy Connolly's character, Brian Johnston. And we get the exposition of, you only need one marker and a wide open space. And the professor has survived by promising them a super weapon. And for the first time, the timeline and tampering is mentioned in this scene, where they're saying about what we were talking about before, the space-time continuum and what they're messing up and things like that. They team up here, A-team style, to find a way out of the loft. My observation here, I've written down here, is Paul Walker is awful, genuinely bad.
He is, and I love the guy. I've seen him in some stuff, and he's like, you are perfect for this, but other stuff you are not. He was like another Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, it's. Gerard Butler's acting rings round him at this point, and I never thought I'd say that. But he's,
I know, Gerard Butler can act, he just doesn't very often.
Yeah, Kate, the lady who plays Kate, which is Frances O'Connor, also a bad actor, apparently. Fucking terrible. Finds a hole in the thatching and they climb out and ends up sliding, but he's saved by Chris, who shoves his hands through the thatching. Pardon? Have you seen how they do thatching, Ben?
I don't think so.
Right, okay. So you don't just put hay on top of a fucking building and it just stays there. You know, thatching is this centuries-old tradition where you put hay on top of something, but it's on top of a solid, like, mud base. So to get your hand through there...
It would have to be, yeah. It would blow away all the time. And it's going to be sturdy. It's a roof.
Yeah. It's still practice today, thatching. So I was like, so you just put your hand straight through there because it's just... That's it. So
it's convenient for the plot.
Yeah.
You can put them out. They're hoping you're not going to think about this that much. Like, again, this idiot audience, that's what they're thinking.
So you can put your hand straight through, but it's okay to support this lady's weight. What?
It's cartoon logic.
Yeah. Kate, the archaeologist, does some Lara Croft parkour shit down the side of the building, and she kills a guard and lets the others out. All these people are just sociopaths. Not one of them have got a problem about killing people at all. They just fucking kill willy-nilly. She has the film lets Kate have a bit of shock for about 11 seconds, I counted. I didn't realise I'd wrote that down. So, yeah, so she's shocked about killing this guard, but only for 11 seconds.
Oh, the movies, it's great. Oh, you can just get over things so easily.
As our heroes escape, Merrick goes to rescue Claire, that's Anna Friel's character, and Gordon tries to use the marker, and they end up arguing. But we see in the future, it's still fucked, and they can't move back anyway because the machine's fucked for him. Merrick and Claire, that's Anna Friel's character, again, the actual French woman. They escape to the river, and a romance of the ages begins to blossom, apparently. They arrive on a shore, and some French soldiers pull them out, and Claire is apparently a lady. Who knew? You know, she's hiding in a fucking a root hole 1 minute, next minute she's a fucking lady. Reach for your dreams, people, that's all I'm saying. Back to our other heroes who have been hiding. They are discovered, and Gordon and the professor are captured while Chris and Kate escape a burning house, but they are presumed dead. Did nobody see him jump out of this house, by the way? I was thinking this when I was watching it. This house is on fire. You'd see these people jump out in the middle of the day, because that's when it sets on fire.
I know, but it's convenient cartoon logic again. It just works.
Just look the other way. Is that a bird up there? Don't worry about the burning house, it's fine. So, Merrick and Claire meet up with some more soldiers, including Claire's brother, Cristiano, who is the Merovingian in The Matrix, if you're wondering who that chap is. Chris and Kate hatch a plan to get back into Castlegard and rescue the Professor and Gordon using the mythical tunnels underneath the monastery that they were digging up. I mean, the dialogue and the way it is delivered here is something to behold. And I don't mean in a good way. You're talking about two bad actors with some pretty simple but hefty dialogue delivered like they're not acting at all. Just like reading from a page.
Again, it just seems like everyone wanted a payday, and they didn't have, there wasn't many takes, and they just half-arsed it and thought, I'd rather be bad in a bad movie than good in a bad movie and look like I tried, but end up being bad even though I tried or something. So they're just half-arsing it, man. I think everyone's just enjoying a payday thinking no one's ever going to watch it.
So at this point, Lord Oliver burns the village down, and the English ambush the French, and they capture Merrick and Claire. There's a caravan on the way to a castle, and they dump Merrick on the cart. Gordon and the professor are being dragged behind. One of Oliver's knights turns out to be Decker, you know, from the start of the film, who gets told, oh, if you see Decker, kill him. You know, remember that bit? Yeah, nobody else does either. Yeah.
You know, I kind of just drifted out a lot with this movie. I was like, I'm enjoying myself, but I don't really care what's happening.
Yeah, I paused it a lot and just went, hey, what? But it is fun. He was a member of Frank's original team, apparently, and he's the knight who killed the guy at the start of the film.
Oh, my God. I thought you were dead.
Right. That's why you sent Tao to assassinate.
No, not to assassinate, to bring you home, to bring you back.
Right, just like you are.
No, look, listen to me, Bill. I need your help to...
What's this?
Look, it's not working anyway.
It says here you got less than 1.5 hours left.
It doesn't work.
Bullshit.
Look, you gotta believe me, it wasn't my fault, okay? I've got a family.
Yeah?
You've met my family, you've been to my house, I...
You have a family.
I've got a family.
So did I! No! 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 Oh, shit! Oh, my God!
Last time I saw him, he was running like hell with his marker for an open space. I was on the ground, 3 arrows in me.
So he unceremoniously, just out of nowhere, just straight up kills Neil McDonough's character, Gordon. Just kills him. No fucking about. And I went. Yeah. I was like, if the rest of the film was like that, we'd be onto a fucking winner. Because that was straight out of left field, that was. I didn't see that coming at all.
That's what I found weird with this movie. It's like, what is the tone? Because it's dark with some killing and some unnecessary murders and that. And then other times it's like downright boring and badly written. It's like three directors were coming in day to day and just doing different things and they just stuck it together at the end. It's like the Star Wars sequel trilogy. Yeah.
You got an idea.
It's just all over the place.
It's fine.
Yeah, do what you want.
In amongst all this, we learn that our team have only got 90 minutes left now on the marker before they're trapped in the pass. Chris and Kate go to the monastery and they seem to love the professor at this monastery and they want to help. Just a gentle reminder, 6 hours, people. That's all they had, 6 hours. And they've managed to get from the woods to a village, captured twice, and then to a monastery, all in 6 hours. I can't get to fucking work and back in 6 hours some days. Fucking hell. Anyway, Kate finds the tunnels at the monastery, and we get an exposition dump of Lady Claire being killed by Lady Claire gets killed, and that ignites the French to win. Over the English. The French ready for battle and load the trebuchets, and the professor buys our heroes some time with the promise of Greek fire to Lord Oliver. French get ready to attack. That'll be a first for them, I suppose, you know.
And then, I was wondering if I was going to get some kind of French jokes coming out. By the way,
I'm trying to keep my French prejudices under control for this year. Back to the future. Everybody, we see the lab is at 81% and Doniger is going to pull the plug, saying it's too risky, but he's covering his tracks, basically. That's what he's doing. The battle commences back in the past, and the French launch volleys and receive some, and then they do what they do best, and they retreat. Good old Frenchies.
Cheese-eating surrender
That's
monkeys.
That's a fucking loop. Kate and Chris are still crawling through the tunnel, like, and just like they're acting, the tunnel reaches a dead end.
No.
Look, I'm like 4, right? Maybe it's just... Oh, we could go up, right?
Yeah.
We could go up, we could go up.
Kate.
Maybe we missed something. Maybe we made a wrong turn. We could.
It's too late. It's just too late.
I said, trust me, and I've let you down, and I've let your father down, and I've let everybody down.
No.
Oh God, I'm so sorry.
No, you didn't. Yeah, come here. Yeah, come here. Come here. Come here.
So the monks turn up on the battlefield and tell Cristiano about the tunnel. So him and 20 men ride off in the middle. Him and his best 20 cavalrymen in the middle of a battle fuck off to a monastery because some people are in the tunnel. That was brilliant. He arrives anyway, and we see how the glasses from the start get broken. And then with 13 minutes to go, Doniger and Kramer scuffle. Who the hell's Kramer? Oh, Kramer, he's from the future. He's Doniger's sort of right-hand man. They scuffle, and because Doniger is actually covering his tracks, and he's saying, you can't do that. You know, these people trapped in the past, they're your responsibility and all that crap. Anyway, Lord Oliver threatens to hang Lady Claire if the French don't retreat. So Andre blows up the fucking castle with the Greek fire that the professor's made. Andre Merrick, that is, by the way, that's Gerard Butler's character, Merrick. Cristiano and his men catch up to Kate and Chris in the tunnels, and at the same time, Merrick blows up the castle and a hole appears in the tunnel. Now that was fucking handy, wasn't it? All at the same time.
Oh, so convenient.
In the right place as well. Could have been, you know, half a mile down. No, exactly the right place. Anyway, so they invade from the inside out, these 20 men. Just lucky, that's all it was. The battling confrontations continue. Oliver and Cristiano, Merrick goes to save Claire, and then he ends up battling Decker on the battlements and the ramparts. Cristiano kills Oliver, of course he does, that's the way it should be, while he's trying to kill Chris. There's lots of grunting and groaning and sword swinging in the scuffle, and Merrick loses an ear to Deckard, of course he does, and now we know where our one ear fucking knight's going to come from. Of course it is.
That would be a great payoff if I cared about the film at all, and all these deaths would be more meaningful than that. It's really bad, and I struggled to give a shit. I was just watching it and laughing at it's terribleness.
Yeah, if I've got a bit wayward, I'm sorry. This is the most notes I've ever written for a film. It was fucking quite to say it was a nothing film was really quite entailed. Anyways,
there's a lot of like talking points and crazy plot devices for no reason. That's why you got so many notes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's more notes than there was script.
Yeah, so Merrick kills Decker, and if you're wondering, the archaeologist kills a Marine. That's right. The archaeologist who has been living in the past and surviving in medieval France is killed by an archaeologist who has just arrived 6 hours before. Fuck me.
It's like a child wrote it, and then what happened is this, and then this, and then that happened.
It's exactly how I'm reading it.
Why did that happen? I don't know, but then this come next, and then this is exciting.
At this point, Merrick decides to stay in the past with Claire, because 6 hours, that's a love affair, that is right there, people. And we get some absolutely fucking top draw Oscar winning acting from Paul Walker, and he goes, "I'll miss you, Merrick."
I bet that was a one take. It must have been. Yeah, that'll do. Richard Donner's like, "I'm not hearing that 1,000 times. Just do the first one.
I love this so much because he goes, "I'll miss you, Merrick." And then he runs off and he never looks back. Doesn't give a fuck about his friend he's never going to see again.
That's just Paul Walker running off the set, trying to get his paycheck and leave quickly.
Fuck it up. Anyway, we jump between the future and the past, and we see that the machine is... it's about to work, and Doniger's trying to destroy it. He jumped in the machine and he's trying to bust all the plates up in there. And just as our heroes are about to be attacked, Doniger jumps at that moment, and they sort of swap places. So Kate, the professor, Paul Walker's character, they all jump back into the future, and Doniger jumps back to the past just as a rider swings his sword and it takes his head clean the fuck off. So he gets murdered in the past. And then we fade to 1 year later. Back at the monastery, they find Merrick's grave, and we find Merrick married Claire. No, he named his kids after his friend. And after all that joviality, guess what, Ben? The end.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, there's no more crazy shit going to happen in the last 5 minutes?
No, that's it. The end. Let's get to the sum up and reaction then, Ben. So give me everything you've got after you've watched the film now. Tell me exactly. I mean, obviously we've ripped this to shreds, but go for it.
Yeah, I'm not in love with like medieval type stuff anyway. It's not something that I go and watch, but a good cast can sell me on a medieval film or period piece or whatever you want to call it. So this the ensemble was great. I'm like, yeah, I'll have some of this. This is going to be great, even if it's bad. And it wasn't great, but it was bad. It had some moments that were enjoyable but felt out of place. It had no script to speak of, just major plot points with no filler. Just let's get to the next thing quickly because time's ticking and the money's running out or something. It just felt very rushed. And people were casting this that shouldn't have been. I feel like there's a lot of managers or agents putting strings to get people like, I don't know, Paul Walker in this movie that should never have been there.
I'll miss you, Merrick.
Yeah, if this movie was made today, instead of Paul Walker, it would be Charlie Hunnam.
Oh, it really would. I mean, yeah, everything you've just... I wanted so much more from this. When I picked it up and I looked at it and I was like, a Richard Donner film I've never heard of. Yeah, it's got Paul Walker in. Yeah, it's, you know, a film I've never heard of. But, you know, this could be it. This could be the film that you know, I've mined for gold and I've found it. I mean, in theory, it's all there. Author, director, premise, movie stars, everything. But it's just so dumb and formulaic. There's nothing in this at all. You know, there's no character development at all. There's no motivation to what they do at all. There's nothing, you know.
It looks like everybody involved did not have a passion for this. It did not have any... they didn't have no connection to the film. They didn't really care. It's just going through the motions and realising, oh, look what we've signed up for. And everybody involved is just like, let's just try and get it done and get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, all of that is fine if you've got... You know, if you haven't got anything else working for you, if everything else is dodgy, but you've got spectacle, then you can sort of... You know, level it out and go, yeah, we've got all this and it's not working, but we've got the spectacle of this. And there is some spectacle in this, so there's some giant action scenes, but they're shot like Richard Donner's angry at everybody. It's really weird and it's like there's no interesting camera angles or anything.
Yeah, exactly. No interesting camera angles, which, you know, Richard Donner would do some great angles and it would make even this movie could have been made more entertaining and accessible through his vision of the way he's directing style, and he didn't bother. He was just like, this is the shot, get it and that's it, rather than trying to make anything look more dynamic or anything. You look at the Goonies, it's a spectacle. It's not just a little adventure film. It's really awesome and looks professional and is amazing. He can do that, but either the budget or studio interference or whatever, it just made him not try it hard at all.
Yeah, I mean, the saving grace for me of the film is Michael Sheen, because he's fucking brilliant and he's the most entertaining thing of the whole film. And unfortunately, he's completely underused. He's in like five scenes, that's it.
Yeah, but when he came into it, he kind of rejuvenated the movie for me a bit. I'm like, oh, it's getting more exciting now. You know, I'm interested because somebody's actually trying. I'm guessing he thought, you know, this movie's not going to be the best thing in the world, but I'm going to make sure I do the best job I can do. And did. You know, that was great. I could just watch a film. I could just watch that spin-off of him.
Yeah.
You know, and forget all the time travel stuff.
Like we were saying before, it all looks so pedestrian and it's all flat. You know, the cinematography is, at best, it's safe. There's nothing interesting about it. I will say I appreciated the real absence of CGI throughout the whole thing. It was very seldom used and everything that they did looked really good. It just wasn't photographed well. You know, like.
No, it looked dull.
Yeah, I mean, like you looked at everything. The sets were fucking outstanding. The costumes looked cool. The battles were fucking decent. But it all just looked a bit like they were shot from half a mile away, and everybody wanted just to go to lunch. You know, it's like let's get it done and move on.
Yeah, like you say, it was safe. It's like a director who's not inspired and hasn't got anything about them. Like, you know, certain directors stand out, like Spielberg. You know, when you're watching a Spielberg film, you know, and Tarantino, you know, and Richard Donner, you know,
yeah.
But if you didn't tell me it was Richard Donner, I would never know. I'd just think, okay, some director had a crack, they couldn't do it, but they had a big cast and a half decent story, but they couldn't nail it. But we had the director, so there's no excuse. It's just, I don't know, man. You just did not enjoy yourself.
I mean, let's round this up with acting, Ben. Let's talk about the acting.
Yeah, everybody was on a day off.
Oh my God.
Paul Walker, he needs to really, really try hard to get a good performance, but he didn't even try in this one. So you can imagine it. If you haven't seen it, you can imagine how bad it is.
I think when you watch this film, if you have if you ever wondered what a character actor looks like, look at Neil McDonough in this, because Neil McDonough. And to be fair, Neil McDonough and Gerard Butler are probably the only two, and Michael Sheen, who come out of this unscathed for me, because at least they're doing a solid job. He may not be, you know, I mean, Michael Sheen's a bit flashy. Neil McDonough, the guy who plays Gordon, the security guard, he's solid right the way through. You know, he gives you the right amount of emotion in every scene, what you need, and that's it. He does a stellar job in when everybody else is either phoning it in or, like Paul Walker, phoning it in from the car. Because...
from a car phone with bad connection.
Yeah, he really is. It's a strange one, isn't it?
I'm guessing it's down to the enjoyment of the movie. So they either want to do a good job because they're having a good time and they're happy to be there, or they're like, well, I don't really want to be here, but I'm going to do my best. And the other people are like, I didn't want to be here, so fuck this movie. And, you know, it's just, it's, you need a cast to gel. Mm. And you need everybody on their A game to make a great movie, and you have to all be there to make compromises and, you know, take direction and stuff. And I'm guessing not many people on that set took direction, especially Paul Walker. No. You know, if they're going to say act better, you can't.
Brilliant. I mean, everything we've just said, you know, we've spent near enough an hour talking about this film, and everything I've said about this film, we've ripped it apart. Having said that, it's not the worst film I've ever seen. And there are some redeeming features. It's just a bit boring. That's all. That's his biggest problem. It's just a bit boring and forgettable, you know.
Yeah, I think three quarters of the way through, I'm thinking, this has not been the worst thing ever, but I wanted more. It's, I don't know. I don't know if I wanted it to be more silly or I wanted it to be more serious. I don't know. Mm. It's the director thing that's really thrown me off, because I could just take this as like a straight to Sci-Fi Channel kind of movie and be like, yeah, this is fine. But it's like, Richard Donner, how dare you get my hopes up?
Right, well, after all that joviality, we will move on to the verdict.
Gentlemen of the jury, reach the verdict.
Considering all the facts and arguments presented by both counsel, and after careful deliberation,
the jury will retire and consider the evidence.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
Verdict, judge!
So final thoughts on this then, Ben?
It's one of those movies that if I saw around, I would pick it up because I recognise the cast and director, and I am like a movie connoisseur. You know, I do want to see as many films as I can, so I would have definitely picked this up myself and watched it and been disappointed. Sometimes you find ones and you're like, oh, I never knew that existed. I'm so glad now I do. And that's a bit of trivia in my brain of this actor. This one, I'm like, oh, I don't even need to bring this up in conversation. You know, it's not even going to get a good story out of it. It's just like, yeah, I've seen that. Go away now.
I think you've just hit the nail on the head there, right there, where you bring up films, have you seen this, have you seen that, have you seen the other? And this is exactly that. This is not anywhere near clever enough or entertaining enough to sit in your brain. It was an instant forgettable watch. You just forget it, and that's the end of it. You won't remember it at all. And I didn't want that from this book, but that's exactly what it is.
No, I don't want that. I don't want to be talking about Richard Donner and bring up this movie. I just wouldn't, because it's not even like I could say, oh, it's really bad, you need to see how bad this is. Like, well, it's not really bad. It's just wrong in places. Yeah. It's just a mess. And I might bring it up in a Paul Walker conversation just to say, well, you need to check out this line. A few of these, I'll just watch it on YouTube. Check out Paul Walker in this, what's it called again? Time what?
Timeline.
That's what I mean? Yeah,
exactly.
Timeline.
Exactly.
Oh, it's not even catchy, is it? Timeline.
Exactly.
You know, time cop, you're like, oh my God, it's a cop, and obviously it travels time.
Exactly.
Your timeline could be anything. It should have been something like, I don't know, Renaissance, time travel.
Well, that's the thing, you see.
Better than that.
They bring up timeline and you think, okay, this is going to be one of them sort of witty, you know, you change something in the past, it's going to affect the future and they're going to keep jumping. And then it's like, no, timeline's got fuck all to do with it. It don't matter. You know, whatever they do in the past does not affect the future in one bit. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
No, if they've shit all over the timeline, you know, if you want to stick to different rules, then if you want to make different rules, then just stick to them. But it's like some rules of some time travel movies are in this and they're mixed up. You know, you can't, whatever you do doesn't change, but then they come back and some things have changed.
I guarantee you at some point when they were writing the script for this, there is a page being ripped out of the script that says, McDonough's character, Gordon, says to the crew, if you die in the past, you die for real. And they went, ah, stupid, that's got to come out.
I like that.
I mean, for me, I don't want to say this, but it just lacked magic. And this is Richard Donner. This is You Believe a Man Will Fly, Richard Donner. And it's just not there. You know, the Goonies is just magic. It's that's it. You put that on for anybody. That film is magic. It's an adventure story. This wasn't an adventure story. This was evading some bad people. But were they bad people? Weren't they just in... I don't really know. You lot probably wouldn't have even been registered on their radar. You know, it's just contrivance. So, yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's like nobody had any faith in this movie. Yeah, it's a disappointment for me. I'm half glad that I've seen it, but if I hadn't, I don't think I'd care, you know.
So, out of a pound, how much would you be happy to pay for this, Ben?
I always go off quarters and halves, right? So it's either going to be a quid or 50p or 25. It's 25 for me. 25p. If I picked it up for 25p, I'd be like, yeah, well, it's 25p. 50p, I'd be like, oh, man, I could have had two 25p movies for this.
Well, I'm going to not be as harsh as you with this one because, to be fair to the film, I've watched a lot worse, and especially for this podcast, and I've enjoyed talking with you about it, so it's instantly gone up a bit more, to be honest. So I'm going to give it 40p. So you're going to give it 25 and I'll give it 40, which is a... I'm going to round it down. It's an average score of 52.5. We'll call it 52. 52 pence out of a pound, which I don't... Which is exactly what pretty much everybody scored it as. It was about 2.5. So we're right in the ballpark there, to be honest. So yeah?
Yeah, that's not so bad. It's because of the time we live in now, where you can just stream anything anytime you want, like, it's easy for me to say it's not worth the money at all because I can just stream it. I did stream it. You actually paid the money for it. But it's not the money that I'm bothered about. Obviously, it's pence. It's the went to a shop and found this and brought it home and it turned out to be this. When you said to me what the movie was, just put it on. On the streams.
Well, to be fair, I bought out of a charity shop, so my money went to charity. So I did a good thing in one respect. You know, they didn't do me...
That's a very good point.
They didn't do a very nice thing for me. They gave me that fucking film. So
I feel like my collection of DVDs that I'm pleased with has an abundance of shit, like, not shit like this, but some dodgy stuff in there because I just want to see a film. So I'll buy it and I might never watch it again. So I do enjoy this, like, the streaming era, because it's like, oh, that doesn't have to be on the shelf now because I can't throw it away or give it away. Once I own it, I have it in my library and I like having a library of films, but I need to stop that. So I'm glad I didn't go out there and buy this for it to just sit on the shelf.
Well, after that bombshell, we are at the end of the cast. I'd just like to say thank you very much, Ben, for coming along on to the third episode that you've appeared on. Thanks so much for coming along and talking about Timeline with me. And it's time to promote the Super Glued Wooden Pirates.
Well, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, Wayne. I do like this podcast. It's a different take on things. Nobody else is doing anything like this, so I enjoy coming on here. If you like me, what you've heard of me, and you want to check out more of my voice, I do another podcast with my friend Captain Smuse, called Superglued Wooden Pirates, and it's on Spotify and all those other places, and it's movie based. It's like, sometimes it's themed episodes, so it could be the whole Spider-Man movies, which is what we've just done, or there might be a Halloween special where we talk about horror movies or Christmas specials and all stuff like that. So it's just us talking about movies and throwing our opinions out there, and come along and check us out, and you never know, you might like us.
Yeah, I enjoy listening to your podcast because I get two reactions listening to your podcast. I either go, yeah, I totally agree with that, yeah, absolutely, or I go, what the fuck are you lot talking about?
That's what I love. It is so divisive sometimes with people who listen who do give us feedback like yourself, and it's like, how can me or Joe like a certain movie and both love it, and then there's another movie and we're both on other ends of the spectrum?
Yeah.
It just makes no sense sometimes with what we like, because we do like some shit, but we know what's a good movie as well. So it's always that, okay, I can admit that this movie is good critically, but me personally, I did not enjoy it. And then you get that contrast of, well, I love this movie, but I know it's bad.
Yeah, so go check out the Super Good One Pirates. As always, thank you for coming along to episode 24 and listening to our witterings about 2003's Timeline. If you listen to this, you've already subscribed to the podcast, so I'm not going to give you all that jargon, but thanks again for listening. I've been Wayne, and he's been Ben. Say goodbye, Ben.
Goodbye, Ben.
Goodbye, Ben. And thank you once again for listening to the One Pound Movie Podcast. We'll see you again soon. Goodbye.